It all started with a very simple idea. Tell the stories of how successful middle market CEOs made it to the corner office. I'm Brand Handley, founder and managing director of Resource Options International, or ROI. We're the USA's premier executive search firm focused exclusively on empowering middle market companies to attract, hire, and retain A players while transforming top executives' careers and lives. ROI's Into the Corner office is dedicated to discovering how middle market CEOs advance their career, and we're making these remarkable and sometimes quite unbelievable stories available to you for the very first time. Listen and learn about the challenges they've overcome, the interesting people they've met along the way, and the lessons learned that steered these executives' unique journey into a middle market corner office of their own. I know you enjoy these CEO stories as much as I've enjoyed recording them. So thank you for listening today. And if you like what you've heard, rate us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm looking forward to you joining me on the next great middle market CEO adventure into the corner office. My guest today is Tony Martinetti, founder and chief inspiration officer of Inspired Purpose Partners. Tony is a trusted advisor, leadership coach, and facilitator, best-selling author, podcast host, and speaker. He brings together over 25 years of business and leadership experience and extreme curiosity to elevate leaders and equip them with the tools to navigate through change and unlock their true potential. Before becoming the founder and chief inspiration officer, Tony was a finance and strategy executive with experience working with some of the world's leading life sciences companies. Along his journey, he also managed small businesses and ran a financial consulting company. He started his career at the Gillette Company after graduating from Northeastern University. Tony hosts the Virtual Campfire podcast and is the author of Climbing the Right Mountain, Navigating the Journey to an Inspired Life, and the co-author of Secrets of Next Level Entrepreneurs. He's been featured in many publications, including Fast Company, Forbes, Life Science Leader, and CEO Today. Tony Martinetti, welcome into the corner office.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here, Brent.
It's great to see you. And we're catching you in Boston today, I think, right? And the weather's still a little cold. Winter's not quite over yet.
Absolutely. It is, you know, it is the winter season, so we should expect that. But, you know, it hasn't been that bad. We haven't had the worst of winters.
Yeah, I think only one nor'easter so far this year from what I've read.
Yeah. Only been one big one. So, you know, We're well seasoned. We know what it can be like. So this has been nothing compared to what we've seen.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, great to have you on the show. And we always kind of start the podcast off with the early years. Tell us a little bit about where you grew up and what your early family life was like.
Yeah, believe it or not, I grew up in the Boston area, in the suburbs. And so born and raised here by a family. My parents came from different parts of the world. My dad came from Italy. My mom came from Lebanon. Our family came from Lebanon. And so I've got this interesting blend of immigrants who influenced my upbringing. And I was an artist as a child who then eventually found his way doing interesting things in the finance world. So.
Were you inspired by in your art with one of your parents or brothers or sisters or teachers? How did you kind of come across that as a gift?
No, I was the oddball. I was the oddball in the family. Not a single one of my family members was into art, but it was just something that I stumbled into, and I happened to be really good at it. And then as the time went on, I think a lot of people said, "Hey, you should find something that's going to actually make you a living."
Important for survival. What did mom and dad do, Tony?
My dad was he owned a company. It was when he came to the country, he was an electrician at first, but then eventually ended up starting his own alarm system company. And when I was growing up, I worked for my dad doing all types of different odd jobs, running electrical wiring. In fact, my dad on the side also had a business doing construction. We built a total of 7 different buildings. Well, I should say 3 buildings and 5 houses.
Wow. Brothers and sisters?
Yes, a brother and a sister.
Yeah, cool. I know you work a lot, and we'll talk about this in a few minutes, with inspiring others. But tell us a little bit about what inspired you when you were a kid.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I was always inspired by Indiana Jones and the adventure seekers, the, you know, getting out there and finding new lands and exploring new worlds. And so for me, that's what I wanted to be when I was a kid. I wanted to be the explorer. And I think that was something that I, even to this day, find myself connecting to. This 2 years ago, I climbed Kilimanjaro, which to me was quite an adventure.
Yeah, I imagine. So, awesome. And what kind of influence did your parents have? Were there certain things that you learned from them, or, you know, was kind of passed down as part of the family legacy, particularly, you know, them being immigrants?
Yeah. And there's some things about it that I just, I cherish. And I still, because both of them have passed. I really think back to this now in the context of where I'm doing the work now, is there's three C's that come to mind. Number one is compassion. My mother was a very compassionate person. My dad too. They treated everyone like they were, you know, their best friends, no matter who they were. They were just warm and inviting to everyone who came into their world. And connection is the second C that comes to mind. It's one of my values too. Connection. My dad was a connector. He would connect with people. He knew people from all different walks of life, from all different places in the world. And you know, he came from humble beginnings, but he found ways to get broad reach. And then the last thing is curiosity. My mother was super curious. She was always learning new things and expanding her own understanding of the world. So I learned that from them. I applied it in different places, but that's really where I got that from. And I'll just add one other thing, which is the hard work mentality. I think immigrants have that sense of coming to the country, especially back in those days, where like you start from nothing and you have to find a way. And so the best way to do that is just work super hard. That was ingrained in me, but I will say that there's also a flip side to that, that it can be, you can overdo it. And that's what I learned to break out of, is to know that it's smart, working smarter, not harder.
Yeah. Were you a good student in school?
Absolutely. I don't be conceited, but I was a smart kid and I did well. But I also had that side of me that was social, and I was a connector. So I did talk to a lot of different people from different walks of life, and enjoyed the social aspect of school.
Did you pursue the artistic abilities in school, or was that something that was more of an after school experience?
Yeah, I did, actually. I was in advanced placement art. I literally was on the trajectory to become an architect until I had this flip moment near the end of my time in high school, where I decided that I was going to become a doctor and went to pre-med.
Wow. All right. We'll hear a little bit about that in a moment. What about sports, music, theater, anything like that you got involved with?
No music. Well, besides being a passionate music aficionado, I probably knew more about classic rock than most people could ever imagine. but I didn't play any instruments besides the drums for a brief stint. But I didn't do any drama, or, you know, for me, it was just painting, drawing, and, you know, that sort. Now I'm actually into glass blowing, which is something that I do.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
So. Did you pursue any entrepreneurial activities when you were a kid?
Not really. For me, a lot of my time outside of school was spent working with my dad. So he literally had me doing stuff like construction work at a very young age. I had a job beyond that.
Yeah, pretty much did that all the way then through junior high and high school.
Yeah. I mean, to the point where we built a Cape house, and I was responsible for a Cape Cod, a vacation home that basically I was responsible for putting the entire vacuum cleaning system in and the telephone system from soup to nuts.
Wow. Cool. So learned a little bit of electronics along the way and other useful things, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So you went to Northeastern. Obviously, that's a school in the Boston area. Was it kind of a foregone conclusion that you'd go to school? Was that something, you know, you had either intended or mom and dad steered you towards?
No, I mean, it was something that I have thought about other schools, like, you know, the Harvards and the more Ivy League schools. But Northeastern just resonated with me because there's a sense of, first of all, it being close by to home, but also that they had the co-op program. And I love the idea of being able to get into the workforce and try things out before I graduated. And that's what I did. I had a resume before most people knew what a resume was. at least my friends did. Yeah.
That's great. What kind of co-op experiences did you have when you were at school?
Yeah, my first co-op job was an interesting one. I worked at a semiconductor company called LTX. They do testing for semiconductor connections. And so that was an interesting one. But then I, after that first one, I spent most of my co-ops doing work at Gillette. So I worked there for a number of years in their finance department and worked in every division at Gillette, from the blades and razors to Duracell, because Duracell was part of Gillette, to Braun, and on. And I ended up working there full time when I graduated.
That's awesome. You went there right out of school. Yeah. Now, were they a part of Procter & Gamble by then, or were they still an independent company when you joined them?
They were still independent. And I, in fact, I left as they were becoming part of P&G.
Right, right. That's a great training ground. I actually started at P&G myself, so I know a little bit about that history. But Gillette's a wonderful company. I had an opportunity to work with some of the folks there. What were some of the, you know, early leadership lessons you learned while you were at Gillette?
Yeah, some of them were funnier funnier lessons, and I'll share those, and I'll share some of the more serious ones too. The first one was trying to figure out where do you land on the food chain. I had a few senior leaders tell me, like, hey, you're a co-op, you know, you're gonna do the grunt work, and you know, someday you might earn your way into the place where people will actually respect you. So I'm like, okay, that's good to know. but no, they were really good to me. And one of the things I realized is that you can work super hard or you can work super smart. And I think that was one of the things I mentioned earlier, but it came to bear in these roles where, you know, honestly, you know, you only have so much time to be in the workplace, and you don't want to burn yourself out. And here I am, just a young kid trying to, you know, eager to prove myself, but also realizing that, you know, I got to figure these things out as I go. No one's there to teach me. So I learned quickly how to get things done quicker and easier by learning the tricks. You know, for example, putting slide decks together, how do I do it quicker and easier and faster? So that I could prove myself.
Did you start managing people at Gillette, or did that come later in your career?
I did. When I graduated, I ended up working for a particular division where I was responsible for cash management for the global cash management. And I was responsible for a team. It was not like a massive team, but it was definitely an eye-opening experience. And we were responsible for looking at where cash was sitting in different parts of the world, especially in some of these smaller subsidiaries of the organization in Guatemala and India, where we had to track down people and have conversations even when they didn't speak English. So it was really challenging. So I had to call in some translators from time to time. This is going back quite a few years. So now I think everything's pretty much English speaking.
Right. Cool. And when you began managing folks, were they folks about your same age? Did you manage folks that had been maybe, you know, working there longer and kind of have that little bit of an age gap and the comfortableness that goes along with that?
Yeah, there were most of the people I was managing were older than I was, which was interesting. And it felt really uncomfortable because I didn't have that experience. And so one of the things that I really leaned into is this humility that, you know, I don't have the answers, but I'm trying to get the job done. And I'm asking lots of questions about what they think is needed in this situation. So, and I think I still do that today and throughout my career. It was always about, you know, engaging people in the solution, and but also balancing that with, okay, how are we going to move forward and ensure that we don't waste time in consensus building?
Yeah. You spent about 8-9 years, I think, with a company called Genzyme Corporation. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Tell us a little bit about what they did. That was also in finance roles, I think, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, finance. I did some strategy work as well in terms of doing some deals and business development type work. But for the most part, Genzyme was one of these companies where, you know, when you come into an industry, which in that particular instance, it was biotech, there are a few organizations where you get to learn, you know, the how everything works, and you get like a crash course in the industry. And so this was my crash course. I learned a lot about how to navigate the clinical development process and how things work and how companies work together with other partners. So one of the things that was my key to success there was my ability to remain curious and to ask. Mm. I had these curiosity conversations with a lot of people in the organization to find out more about what they do and how they do it and what their challenges were. And my role was basically to initially to be a shared service organization, to build one across all the business units. There was a total of 11 business units at one point of this company. And we focused on rare diseases, oncology, diagnostics, all types of biologic drugs, therapeutics. And it was really an amazing experience because the people there, they were not wired like the people I used to work with. They were driven by making an impact on patients' lives. And right. It showed up in everything they did.
Yeah, so. Cool. And it looks like you, you know, from that point on, kind of got yourself into consulting not too long thereafter. When did you kind of get the inkling that, you know, you wanted to kind of do something on your own and, you know, eventually led to obviously the wonderful company you've got now, Inspired Purpose Partners. I love the Chief Inspiration Officer, you know, title, by the way. That's just fabulous. I know you've done that about half a dozen years, but you kind of started on that path a little earlier. When did you kind of decide, you know, corporate life, yeah, it's okay, but, you know, I kind of want to go off on my own and do a little more of the consulting and then maybe found my own company someday?
Yeah, I mean, it happened gradually, I should say, because it was, you know, after Genzyme, I spent some time working in a few of the companies and realizing that as much as I had such an amazing experience at Genzyme in terms of culturally and learning about how the industry works and fell in love with the industry, to be honest with you, I also began to realize that there's a lot of toxic leadership in the, in not just this industry, but in the workplace. And I kept on running into these scenarios where I felt like, man, there's something missing here. There's something that's not right. And I thought it was just me. I thought it was just, you know, I must be missing something. Maybe I'm doing something wrong. And so I kept on pushing on and pushing on until I realized I was laid off from a company I was working at. And decided, I'm going to give this a try. I'm going to start my own company. And I did. And that was my first foray into starting a company called LifeSci Financial Consulting, staying in the finance vein, which was interesting. And I realized I could do it. That was my first vote of confidence. And, you know, I got most of my clients, people knew who I was. They knew what I was capable of because I had already been doing it. But then I realized that although I had shifted from doing the work of being in-house, it still wasn't really me yet. That came much later, a few years later, when I realized, man, I'm not a finance person. I'm not a numbers person. And people used to say that to me all the time, that there's something more to you than just numbers. Yeah. And I wasn't listening. I was just trying to be the person who's driving a million miles per hour towards that finish line that I thought I wanted. And that I'd be happy when I got there.
Right? You mentioned toxicity in the workplace. And, you know, I hear this so often in my recruiting practice. And, you know, candidates now, I mean, it's amazing how quickly they get to tell me about the culture, Brent. You know, let me try to really understand what it is. And you can kind of tell that there's some scars on their back, you know, from some of the past experiences. Tell us a little bit about some of the best or maybe even the worst things that you've seen. You don't need to mention any specifics, but, yeah. You know, is there examples of stuff that you saw that just says, wow, that's just not right? Because, you know, you talk about your parents and how kind they were and how compassionate they were. And you sound like you've got that same approach. And, you know, you see so often that people just, you know, don't exhibit that same sort of behavior. And it's disheartening, isn't it?
It is. And I don't want to be like, well, you know, they're bad people, but I think people, they lose their way because they get so stuck in patterns and yeah. They get so busy that they don't even realize what they're doing when they start to treat people the way that they do. And so let me just kind of give you some context as to what that looks like. I mean, some of the conversations that I, you know, was part of is, oh, you know, who cares if they leave? They're, you know, we'll just replace them. That kind of attitude.
Right. Right.
You know, like treating people like they're just cogs in a wheel. And I, you know, okay, great. You know, we're in an industry that is got a lot of vibrancy and there's a lot of people who can fill positions. Sure. But they're people and they're, right. This is their livelihood. And treating people like they're just something that can be just replaced like a toner cartridge is not a good way to look at it, you know, and at least not in my mind. And so hearing those types of things were not great. Another thing I saw, just to kind of give you one other example, is, you know, arguing about simple things that, you know, who's right and who's wrong about a particular topic and really pushing on to be the right person, not to... Yeah. Be open to hearing other people's perspectives,
right,
and using
right.
your positional power to drive that, as opposed to saying like, hey, I may be the leader, but I'm open to being wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Not acting like, let alone being the smartest person in the room.
Yeah.
We see a lot of that. Yeah. What about mentors, Tony? Any mentors you had along the way, or have you done any mentoring now that you're, you know, a little further along in your career?
Yeah, it's a great question. If you were to ask me like back then, I would have said, I don't have any mentors. There's nobody's really helped me. But I think that's untrue. I mean, there's been some people who unbeknownst to me were pushing me along, helping me to see things differently. And they just didn't do it as like a formal mentor relationship. And I think that was, it's an interesting thing, having an invisible mentor almost, is you got to be mindful of that. Think who are the people who are pushing me along without me knowing it? One particular person I think about is when I was at Genzyme, there was, a business unit leader who, you know, kind of shepherded me along and gave me some opportunities to really, amplify who I was and to step into some roles that would challenge me. And I think that was coming from this sense that he believed in me, which is cool.
Yeah.
And then fast forwarding to today, you know, that sense of believing in people, is something that it sticks with me today. This feeling of like, sometimes as a mentor, it's about like seeing things in people that they don't see themselves. And then once you show them that, they start to rise into the occasion.
Yeah, I love that. So Inspired Purpose Partners has been around about 6 years. What was the motivation around that founding? Tell us a little bit about, you know, kind of the thought process. I think you were doing consulting work or were you actually working at another company when you came in? Tell us, you know, kind of the preamble and your current purpose.
Yeah. Well, I'll say I had my LifeSci financial consulting, then went in-house to another company. And then I had that very, very dramatic moment where I decided I've had enough is enough. And I decided, okay, now it's time for me to shift gears and get into a completely different type of work, which led me to this coaching and leadership development work that I'm doing now. And the starting of Inspired Purpose Partners was... you know, it's a play on words in a sense, because it's my inspired purpose, but it was also inspired by this fact that I wanted people to be inspired by their purpose to do the work they're doing.
Right.
And I didn't have a plan. I mean, I was one of those things where I jumped out and I said, okay, I got to figure out how I'm going to change the way that people lead in the world, because enough is enough. I can't do this any longer the way it is. And I want to make a change as to how people are showing up in that, in the rooms, in the boardrooms. So I decided that I would try this coaching thing. And it started with business coaching, and then it morphed into a more holistic view of like seeing people fully, leaders as not just, you know, I'm the person in the room and trying to make an impact, but how are they showing up to their lives? And don't misconstrue this. It's not life coaching, but I think all, when you're working with somebody, you have to understand them fully.
Yeah, you got to look at the whole being. And do you have, are you a sole practitioner? Do you have a large team? Tell us a little bit about the market you serve and how you do so.
Yeah, so I am, my company is kind of like a curator of talent in the sense that I like to think of the curation, like, you know, coming back to my artist roots. I curate people to bring them together, and we serve clients as needed. So I don't want to build a huge team and then not be able to feed people. So the key thing for me is to keep the team light and nimble. So it is primarily me, but I have a cohort of people who I bring together as needed to serve clients, big and small. So that's how it's set up. And in terms of how we serve, so I mentioned coaching, but I also do workshops and programs that are geared to serving teams and big organizations. And I've served organizations that we've done a facilitation for about 2,000 people that large to, you know, small teams of like, you know, 10. So yeah, it's quite diverse, and I like the variety. For me, it's all about us. We're learning a lot as we go through these programs about what people really need out there. So as much as we're sharing and helping them, we're also helping ourselves and learning a lot along the way.
Are you serving any specific sector? You know, we all know, you know, life sciences is huge in Boston. You've certainly worked in that sector as well. But, you know, there's a lot of tech too. Do you have a specialty?
Yeah, I mean, I like tech in general is one of the sweet spots. And I would just say, you know, life sciences for sure. But I don't like to just put myself just in that box alone, because I've really enjoyed the variety of getting into more tech organizations. I've worked with, you know, organizations that do 3D printing, that, you know, do work in software development, you know, you name it. It's really been fun. And I have done work outside of that sector, the tech sector. I've done work with Warner Brothers, you know, insurance companies. So it's not like I want to close a door on any one particular opportunity, but I do get lit up by organizations that have like an innovation slant.
Well, and you know, you mentioned one of your C's, curiosity, which is what I identify with too. And my, you know, corporate career was consumer products and entertainment. I can't remember when I've done a search in either of those sectors. You know, it's been in a variety of others, only because I'm just so interested in learning more and more about that. And I'm sure you feel that draw as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you think are kind of some of the most impactful executive development activities that that teams and executives can engage in today?
Yeah, well, I think it doesn't have to be quite as challenging that, you know, people think it's got to be something fancy and over the orchestrated. But one of the things that I found really interesting, and this actually is a good lead in from my book that I just published in December, it's called Campfires of Connection, this workshop that I developed. And really what it is at the core of it all is getting people to come together and share more of who they are and build connection so that when they feel more connected with each other, like through sharing stories or parts of themselves that they haven't shared intentionally, then what happens is it actually unlocks their creativity, their innovation, just generally better teams. So, you know, as much as in the past you've seen companies say like, oh yeah, we have like we warm our every meeting we have a little small talk and all that. That's great. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a very intentional space for deeper conversations.
You know, it really resonates as well. And, you know, you hear so much about, you know, the importance of vulnerability. And, you know, I think about the CEOs I worked with 20 years ago when I first got into search that were my age today. And, you know, they didn't even believe in psychographic testing, you know, and what I'd have to do to get them on board about, you know, these different areas. Versus I think today there's been a real trend towards, you know, much more openness in the C-suite. And you know, that's important. I think people need to be able to know that, you know, they can be vulnerable with their staff and it's not a threat. It's actually can be a real strength.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, and sometimes people overlook at it and say like, oh, it has to be some depth, you know, in-depth thing. Sometimes it's a little things. And, you know, I did this TED talk a while back, which, you know, it's about the title of it, Don't Check Yourself at the Door. And I think that one of the concepts in there is it could be about your hobbies and the things that you do on the weekends that people don't know. You know, do you donate your time at, you know, some volunteer work that you do that it's not bragging. It's about like, who are you? Like, we want to know a bit more about who you are besides the executive self.
Yeah, very important. You see a lot of workplaces, Tony, and you know, I'm sure some of them are doing just fine and they bring you in because they want to kind of, you know, maybe get into third or fourth gear. Others are broken and others you maybe wonder, why am I even here? You guys are doing great. What do you think are some of the tenets, some of the, you know, the key cornerstones of successful workplace culture today?
Yeah, the ones who admit that they don't have all the answers and are willing to be open-minded and look outside their doors for ways to connect and collaborate. And I think that's the, you know, look at some of the organizations that are connecting with companies outside of their field and, you know, creating ways to partner up. You know, the realization is that, and this comes back to something that I believe in deeply, it has driven me in my business is the sense that amateurs compete and professionals create. I think the same thing goes true for businesses.
Do you see a lot of employee retention issues? You know, we've kind of come out of COVID and employer, you know, workforces are being restructured, unemployment's still low. And, you know, I'm curious just from my perspective, again, in the recruiting field, you know, is retention one of the things that people face? And if so, you know, what do you tell them what to do? You know, how does that kind of get addressed? Or is that something you talk about in your consulting work?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an issue. And I think it will continue to be an issue until, well, I mean, just like not to give it a brush. You can't paint everyone with the same picture. You know, there's some companies are having a harder time than others. But for sure, retention is a challenge because there seems to be this sense that, like, you know, you have to hit all the marks for people. You have to hit that, you know, is this company going to pay me enough? Is this company going to give me the right incentives in terms of hybrid? You know, can I work from home? Are they going to hit that? There's a lot of things people are asking for. In order to stick around, and they know that there might be a company that can hit all those marks. However, there's also a lot of pressure that there's not enough. There's a lot of people out there looking, and that makes it harder for people to say like, okay, maybe it's not as green out there as I thought. So for companies to keep their people, they have to figure out what can I balance. What am I willing to do to keep these people on board? And how can I make sure that it's fair across the board? Because one of the things we're also facing is this generational challenge of like, well, what does Gen Z want? And what does, you know, Gen X? And what does millennials? What do all these people want? And how can I make sure that it's equitable across all fronts?
Right. Right. Now that can be a real challenge, particularly given a lot of those generational differences that we have. I just remember how much of a difference, and reflect on it a few minutes ago, you know, when I was dealing 20 years ago with, you know, CEOs were my parents' generation and, you know, having such a very, very different work ethic versus the CEOs of today, which are kind of more my age and younger, and, you know, their approach and, you know, and it's always changing. So it's a very, very interesting field to be in. Tell us a little bit about, you know, when you evaluate, you know, clients, and I'm sure you've got folks that come from referrals, you've got folks that maybe come through your new business leads, et cetera. What kind of clients really inspire you? You know, what are the ones that you love to work with and, you know, just can't wait to get your teeth dug into in their business?
Yeah. When I hear people say things like, yeah, you know, I'm really anxious to make, I want to make this big impact. Here's this thing that I've been dreaming about doing. And, but I feel like there's something stuck in the way. There's some things that are getting in the way and, you know, I just need someone to help me out. And as soon as like, I start hearing them say about their dream and the impact and, but they know that there's something clearly getting in the way. I know that I've got the right person in front of me, because if they're not aware that there's something else beyond their view, then that's hard, because they may be thinking, if you're thinking that you're where you need to be and you're like, oh, there's nothing else I could have, then you're not right for coaching, or you're not, you know, ready for coaching. Yeah. I want someone who's ready because they're dreaming and they're ready to think that I could be doing more. I could have more, but I also want to make sure that I'm doing it in a way that is right for me.
Inspiring. Well, Tony, we're just about out of time, but we ask all our guests one last question, and that's, you know, what kind of career and life advice would you give to someone that maybe has their eyes on the corner office, or in your case, you know, wants to be an entrepreneur someday and set up their own coaching, consulting, you know, their own independent business?
So first of all, I would start with, this is a quote I love. Well, not a quote, but a thing I share with people, expand your vision and narrow your focus. So what I mean by that, expand your vision is, think bigger, you know, look outside of your box where you're sitting and say, what's possible for me? What else is available to me? Maybe I've been thinking too small. And then once you do identify something and then narrow down and focus on that one thing and try it out. So that's one thing. And the other thing is have more conversations. And not just superficial conversations, but conversations that allow you to really get to know people, because through conversations, they're the gateway for you to be able to get to the next beginning that you'll have.
Tony Martinetti is a leadership advisor to innovative leaders who want to make an impact without burnout. He's a chief inspiration officer. Again, love that title, and has had a wonderful career prior to founding Inspired Purpose Partners. Tony, thank you so much for sharing your journey into the corner office today.
Thank you so much. This is fantastic.
Thank you for listening to Into the Corner Office with Brant Hanley. We hope you enjoyed hearing our guest CEO story as much as we did. If you want to hear more CEOs reveal their journey into the corner office, please subscribe via iTunes and tell your friends and colleagues. For more information about Brant, Resource Options International, and the Mighty Middle Market, visit www.goforroi.com. We look forward to having you join us for our next episode.